Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to be talking about Hoodie, which is a great way to make a web app that works both online and offline. Simple and easy. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 379, recorded March 15th, 2016. Hoodie. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Drobo, a family of safe and expandable yet a simple-to-use storage arrays. Drobos are designed to protect your important data forever. Visit drobo.com/twit and use the code TWIT100 to save $100 off select Drobos, including the new B810i. And by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneAge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you may want to download right after this show and start playing with. I have a feeling today's is going to be something sort of like that. Joining me today is my lovely and talented co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Ah, thank you. Should I do the hair flip?
Okay.
Lovely and talented.
You know, if you guys just listened to this, you're missing so much. You got to do the video every once in a while just to see what we're actually doing. And if you're watching, you notice we have this nice blue sky behind me. I'm back in Santa Monica for another couple of weeks. And we've got the sun because it's DST, it no longer goes straight through the back of my head when I'm taping the show. So that's pretty cool. I'm excited to be back here and working my favorite client for at least for now. All right. So that's this week in geography. So we got on today. Oops, I got the wrong page up. There we go. We have a couple of people coming to talk to us about Hoodie, which as far as I can tell, it's a here we go. We're going to see how well the elevator pitches actually work. It's a back end for front end developers. So if you're someone who likes to do really fancy things with jQuery and maybe some of the more advanced things like Angular and things, you're probably pretty good at JavaScript. Okay, but then you've got the problem of, well, I need to host this somewhere and I need to have permanent data somewhere. How do I do all that? And it sounds like what they've done is create sort of a really nice out-of-the-box solution to let you sort of transition from being a front-end developer to being a whole-stack developer. And now they're going to tell us in a few minutes whether I was actually close or not. Jan Leonard, you may remember him from last week's show. He's doing a back-to-back. I think it's the first time we've ever had somebody back-to-back except for us hosts. And we also have joining us for the first time this time is Jen Turner. And they're going to be coming in to talk about Hoodie. What's your impression of this so far, Aaron?
Well, first of all, I love the name. I mean, you can't get a better name than Hoodie, at least around here in San Francisco. It's, everyone wears hoodies. It's a hoodie culture. So I love the name. I don't know how they got this, but it's fantastic. And I love the concept as well. I mean, I was doing some stuff with, I'll think of the name of it in a little bit. It's a Node.js quick start development tool that IBM put out, and I can't remember what it's called. Red something. Red Node? Node Red. I think it's Node Red. Anyway, but it's cool. It's like Scratch. You drag and drop things, and you can deploy an application based on Node.js in like a couple minutes if you want to. And they're simple little things. I mean, you can't do really complex things. But I was like, wow, this is really cool. I wish someone would actually take this and develop something that you can actually use to develop some really cool apps like this, but in a less, you know, puzzle piece way. And so I'm kind of hoping that's what this is. I don't know. I've read kind of the website, but we'll find out, I guess, from our guests.
Yeah, and actually one other thing I remembered from my 17 minutes of quickly scanning through the website, another important aspect of this is offline first, which means that, you know, you have all these apps that you now have on your phones and your the web interface on your phone and things like that. But as soon as you go into a tunnel, you know, oops, I'm offline. Now I can't keep working on it. Apparently what this does is it uses the CouchDB stuff that we talked about last week and actually the CouchDB implemented in JavaScript to actually resync once it gets the connection back. So you can do a lot of your work offline and then immediately get it back when you come back online. So I'm really excited about that aspect of it. They actually have a whole offline first movement that that they are promoting. So I think this is going to be really exciting. And there's a lot more to this than just, oh, it's a nice little back-end server for Node.js, because it's definitely a lot bigger than that. But and we will bring on our guests in just a minute, but I have an important announcement before I do that. Because digital data is essential to your life and your business. Drobo is the safe, simple, and expandable solution for all your storage needs. Drobo offers a family of external storage arrays. We've talked about Drobos for home servers, photography, and video before, but this week we want to talk about the new Drobo for small business office and the enterprise. Drobo is added to the high end of its product line, introducing the Drobo B810i. It's an 8-bay iSCSI SAN with dataware tiering that offers storage capabilities usually found in more expensive enterprise solutions. Data-aware tiering means that it automatically tiers frequently used transactional data from stored data that's seldom used. This enables businesses to consolidate storage resources and share that storage across all connected clients and their applications. You can access physical and virtual storage in the single array with the on-demand ability to scale for both capacity and performance as needed. Smart volumes allow you to create up to 255 individual drives with a maximum capacity of 64 terabytes each. Provisioning is necessary. No more guessing how big to make each volume. Use it for collaboration, testing, development, backup, running Microsoft Exchange, or more. It's perfect for small and medium-sized businesses that don't have dedicated IT support. Drobos are reliable. Data received by your Drobo and not yet written to disk is protected if it's a sudden power loss. Even better, Drobos have an internal eUSB device where the data is copied and there's a power failure to protect against long outages. It's expandable. Add or replace drives in your Drobo with ease. No tools required. I personally have had a Drobo for about 8 or 9 years, and when I went from 1 terabyte drive to 2 terabyte drives, now to 4 terabyte drives, it was trivial. Just pull one drive out, put another one in, and it heals itself again, and then about 2 or 3 hours, you pull out and push in the next one, and you do that over a period of like 6 or 8 hours, and you're totally up to date and still protected the entire time. It's also simple. The colored lights on the front of the Drobo communicate status. It's very fast. It supports iSCSI, Ethernet, and USB 3.0 connections. Connections, of course, vary per model. So visit drobo.com/twit to learn more about the Drobo B810i and to check out their complete line of products. And when you order a B810i between now and April 30th, you'll get 2 free 2 terabyte hard drives included. Plus, when you use the code TWIT100, you'll save $100 off the purchase of a B810i or the other select Drobo models. That's drobo.com/twit and use the code TWIT100. We thank Drobo for their support of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guests. Jan, welcome back.
Welcome. Hi. Thanks for having me again. I'm indeed Flossing Weekly now.
I think the dentists recommend a little bit more than that, but that's the name of the show. So thank you for that. And where are you speaking to us from? Looks like the same place.
Yes, I'm still in Berlin, Germany.
Okay, very good. Brighter outside
since last time. Okay. for the same daylight savings reasons that we talked about earlier.
Yes, exactly. Actually, I was before the show. Oh, no, maybe it isn't. Because we talked about the sun there. All right, I guess I let anybody host this show because I can ramble on as I wish. Let's also go ahead and bring on, Jen Turner. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
And where are you speaking Thanks to us from?
I'm actually in Brooklyn, New York.
Cool. Well, let me wave in your general direction. Actually, that's both of you guys' direction from Santa Monica here, so there we go. Let's go back to Jan, and give us a 30,000-foot view. How did Hoodie get started, and what problem is it solving?
Good question again. If you remember last week, and if you don't, stop now and go back to last week, listen to the CouchDB episode. One of the more obscure things that we allowed people to do with CouchDB is put applications that were written in HTML and JavaScript into CouchDB itself, because we thought that was a good idea. It was a decent idea, but most of the web development community didn't quite agree with our vision there. But there were a few interesting ideas, and one of the things is, that you mentioned in the intro is the offline first bit, that synchronization when you're online that makes your app work when you're offline, or still work when you're offline. That was still a good idea. And together with my basically Hoodie co-inventor, Gregor Martinez, we came up with the idea for this, taking that same idea but attacking it from a very different angle. And the way that came about is that we were at a conference And Gregor was showing me an app that he built using all that CouchDB technology. And one of the things I should mention is we always had this vision for these CouchDB applications, but we only ever built like 20% of it. And Gregor came over and told me, hey, Jan, I built this app using the Couch app stuff. And I noticed you're missing a bunch of stuff. I wrote a bunch of node modules to fill in the gaps. So he kind of wrote the missing 80%. And I'm like, this is quite nice. We should make this available for everyone, kind of extracting it from the app that he was using. It's called Minutes.io, a little thing that we're doing on the side, which is kind of the base camp to the Ruby on Rails that is Hoodie, kind of the app that is the genesis for the project. So it has a CouchDB heritage, but we attacked it from a very different angle. Whereas from CouchDB, we had a solid database technology, nice JavaScript integration, nice HTTP integration, and we were building upwards from there, like to kind of show what we are, what we want to give to users. With Hoodie, we were thinking backwards from who is this for, and what do they need, and how can we package the software that we like in a way that it is accessible for these users. And our ideal end user is someone who is, like you mentioned in the beginning, good at HTML, CSS, can copy and paste some jQuery. And it's comfortable building an experience on the web, but then kind of always needs to talk to a Rails developer, a Java developer, a PHP developer, or needs to use things like Drupal or WordPress as a backend or something like that to make something where you can like have a user sign up, data storage, all that, the things that only backend servers can do. And Hoodie is really built for these people with a easy to use API and easy to install and all these kind of things. That's the like 30,000 foot overview.
Yeah, you'd probably say a 30,000 meter. No, no, 10,000 meter, not 30,000 meters. How did my plane get that far up there? That's pretty good. Just to bring Jen in for a little bit here. Jen, what's your relationship with the project?
So I've started helping out on the project on the editorial side. And I've just been a fan for a long time. I think I met Jan 3 years ago. And at the time I was working for a company called And Yet, and we've always had a friendly, like, is sister company the right word? I'm trying to think. We've always had those two companies had a friendly relationship. And so we got to know each other through supporting each other. Earlier this fall, when they started promoting that they were looking for editors and writers to help on the project, I was available and I jumped at the chance to work with them because everybody that I know that is involved in Hoodie is just a really wonderful person. So I was excited to have a role finally.
So you're doing mostly writing and stuff. Are you also getting in there and getting technological, what's the word? I'm talking to a writer, as a fellow writer, I can't even remember the word. Do you get technical too? I mean, are you a developer as well?
I like to say that I'm a developer hobbyist. I'm comfortable moving around in CSS and HTML. And I actually gave a talk last week at a Manhattan meetup where I talked about my 4 years of being in a JavaScript community, having only written one line of JavaScript, and it was to make an image blink. But mostly I'm just, what I'm really trying to do right now is to help start this, this idea of the editorial team and, help enable people to jump in on the project as easily as if they were developers. And I just happen to have a background in technology, so I feel very comfortable, maneuvering my way through there and helping other folks navigate too.
Jen is very brave.
Sorry, what was that, Jan?
Jen is very brave, digging all through our programming stuff and making this useful for writers too.
Very good, very good. Well, Jan, I want to get back more to the technical side. Then, what am I looking at? What am I installing? And do I have to do things special to get it offline first, or is that sort of how it is out of the box?
Yeah, let me start with installation. It's based on Couch and Node.js, so you install these two latest development builds. You can even skip the CouchDB bit because we have a Node version where we use PouchDB, which we also talked about yesterday, on the server even, which is kind of weird, but it works out in the end. Which is really nice. So you install Node and Couch, and then you're an NPM install and a coffee brew wait away from setting up your first app. You run Hoodie new, the name of your app, kind of like you're used to from other like application generators, and starts a Hoodie server for you, a CouchDB database, sets up all the security, it asks you for a root password that you can use later. So security is built in as well. And then it opens a sample app for you that you can start playing with or transforming into whatever your app wants to be. And then we have a bunch of templates with other projects, kind of like an Angular, React, and so on, Bootstraps, where the default one is kind of vanilla.js. If you kind of don't know your way, like if you only know the basics, then that's for you. But if you already know, okay, I'm a little bit more advanced, I can kind of take one of those. And get started. So that's the getting started bit.
So, I mean, what kind of applications is this best used for? I mean, I'm thinking I've got a project at our makerspace where I want to create a dashboard that takes inputs from various things like, oh, John's using the table saw right now, or, oh, here's a webcam of the shop, or, hey, you just came in for your 100th time, and it flashes something on the screen, and it gets updates from various things. Could I use this to build something like that?
So Hoodie is general purpose, but the default case it was built for is more the like single user software as a service type thing, like time tracking, note taking, expense tracking, all these kinds of things that we have like tons of software as a service apps for that we're using all over the place. So as far as the data model is concerned, because of various reasons, the data model is that all user data is private to the user by default, which is kind of the contrary to everything else out there, kind of. And you explicitly have to share data with others if you want to. So this kind of plays into a little bit into the privacy security discussion, but also like the larger one, but also in how this is all set up and how you should think about Hoodie. And we are building a few plugins to cover a few common sharing cases, but you can also write your own plugins for Hoodie, and how that works I can explain later, to implement whatever sharing thing you need. So if you it all boils down to the core app that you would want to build is something where a person logs into an account and adds and edits data, has that available offline. But then in the second step, you can still share that data and use it in other ways, like, okay, YouTube people are in the same space, in the same spot or the same location for the third time now, one of you has to buy the other drink, or what, like, or one of the things that you mentioned earlier. So that's definitely possible, but that's a step away from the default case that that we're currently mostly focused on.
Okay, no, that's great. That really helps, because I wasn't sure what you would use to write this for. How much simpler is this to use, just going back to, for folks that may not be developers or have used these kind of tools, how much easier is this than just going out to, say, Google, or using something like OpenShift and saying, okay, I want a server in the cloud, and I want it to have this, this, and this, and I'm going to set that up. And how do you compare using Hoodie to developing an application based on your own cloud infrastructure? I think I know the answer, but I want you to explain it for folks that may not be familiar with how this usually works.
But our target audience is the people who can maybe set up a server and maybe write their own backend in PHP, but they're also, maybe I should step back a second. There is the vision of Hoodie where we want to be, where the person that I explained earlier roughly knows HTML, CSS, and a bit of JavaScript, copy and pasting. That's where we want to be in the future. That's not where we are today. So the current focus is a little bit more a rapid prototyping tool for like people who are comfortable doing front-end development. But it's already useful for these kinds of people, which is already a large group. And we're trying to get all of them on board to actually work on Hoodie itself to make it more easy for the class of users that I've explained. But that is, I explained earlier, but that's kind of where we want to be and where we are. And now the people who are good at front end development are probably okay at like piecing together a back end service. But then you have to consider all your the security best practices, which hashing do I use to encrypt my passwords, and how often do I cycle my encryption keys, and all that kind of stuff that nobody wants to do. And so Hoodie comes in as a layer above. If you are a user of Hoodie, you shouldn't be worrying about this. Of course, that the couch and the Node.js needs to run somewhere, so you have to deploy it somewhere. There's a dedicated Hoodie hosting service that is completely independent of the project, called appback.com, has a nice Heroku-style Git push to their service, and then everything runs for you, which is really nice to get started. But you can also, kind of in the Rails, Ruby on Rails kind of sense, pay your favorite hosting provider to run this for you.
Cool. Very cool. Now, what else would I use if I wasn't using Hoodie? Are there other similar projects out there that either commercial or otherwise that I might be considering?
In the sense that where we're positioning Hoodie, there's no alternative to this, but of course people are comparing us to other projects, and rightfully so. One of the bigger comparisons is Meteor. It's a JavaScript framework that kind of blends front and back end development. And that's one of the most the philosophical differences, that you want to be a full stack developer to use Meteor, but Hoodie is accessible for only front end developers or even people less technical. Other things are Parse and Firebase. Parse is about to be shut down right now. Firebase is still going, but has also been acquired, so we don't know when the sunsetting there happens. And these are so-called backend as a service type solutions. Other similar things are Apple, for example, provides iCloud with cloud storage and sync and accounts and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of the league we're playing with or in.
Cool. Jen, you mentioned that you're working on helping in the editorial sense, trying to get it, make it easier for people to, pick up and use this stuff. How easy is that? I know there's a get started link on the page. I mean, what kind of things are you working on to try to make this easier for people to pick up and get started with?
I mean, ideally, we want to take a look at all of the documentation so that it's very clear how to get started, no matter what skill level you're starting at. And I think that just the whole premise of Hoodie being for people who are non-technical to be able to, build an app with it, lends itself to the open source project as a whole being open to different types of contributors. So that's where I've come in, to try to help, recruit, writers and editors, and different folks that would like to be a part of open source, but maybe it's not, exactly clear, where they would be useful or where they can jump in. So right now we're really at a point where we're in, kind of discovery mode, because I don't know of many other projects that are doing this right now, or they're looking for writers actively at least. The long-term goal would be, to look at that documentation and make sure that it's super clear for folks so that they can jump in at any point.
Well, that's great. And, we're taking a look at your website right now. I don't know if you've had anything to do with that, but the website is, I'll just say it's different in a good way than most websites that we look at on this show, in terms of just the look and feel is really strong. I'm just going through it. I mean, you've got the animals. There's a dog with a hoodie on, which is awesome. Really super cute dog. There's a chicken somewhere I saw, and it looked. I mean, usually there's just one animal associated, right? I mean, you got to pick. I mean, you got to have an elephant, or you got to have a llama, right? I mean, you can't have all these animals. What are you thinking? It's just one animal. So what are you guys thinking with chickens and dogs here? Are there going to be more animals, and are they all going to be super cute like this guy?
If you go to slash animals, you can see the biographies of the animals that we have launched, and there's the bear is coming up, and we have a whole zoo set up. Each animal is kind of associated with a part of the project. Kind of the chicken is for the dogs, for obvious pun reasons. The bear is associated with our newsletter that Jen writes. And there's a few more. We have a few more good lined up, so that's something to look forward to. I'll take this the rest of the question too, since it was before Jen joined. We wanted to take. We've had long experience with open source stuff, and there's a lot of things that I think or we believe could be done better. And we kind of set out to do this in Hoodie. So we wanted to make a website that's fun and approachable, a project that the name is kind of fun too and comfortable. So it adds we wanted to add like a certain level of whimsy and the animals to that and be generally friendly and approachable. So that's why we spent a good amount of time in 2013 and 14 to build this website out and make it really useful. And then, from a bit of a... information architecture point of view, it's less a README and more a choose your own adventure, where wherever you end up coming into the website, there are a bunch of links to get you anywhere else you want to go. Even at the end, like, okay, now I'm done with this tutorial, where can I go next? So that's kind of the thinking behind that. And then more generally, we want to have a friendly and approachable open source project for people. So we want to make it look like where people actually want to hang out and be and not kind of scare them away with monospace font and green on black type.
Hey, we actually have a question, a lot of questions actually from the chat room. We have a live chat room during the show. And one of them is, O Fortuna says, why can't you buy an actual hoodie in Hoodie Store?
That's actually a really good question. It's kind of we haven't put this on there, but we want to make it like an unlock feature. If everybody chips in and helps ship Hoodie 1.0, then you're unlocking the hoodie in the store. So it's kind of an incentive for people to help.
And what we were talking about earlier, I think I mentioned this in the intro, that part of what makes this all work, and especially work offline, is the CouchDB implemented in JavaScript. I think you call that PouchDB or something else?
Yes, correct. Yeah, no, that's correct.
And so why is that interesting? I mean, we can back and listen to last week's show, but for people just listening to this week's show, what is interesting about PouchDB and actually then talking to a CouchDB that's on my server?
The interesting bit is that things you're used to from, say, native email clients using IMAP is that you know you can read and write and search and do anything with your email at any point in time, regardless of your connectivity situation. So whether you're at home, in a train, in a subway, on the phone, wherever, it always kind of works. And when you know you're offline and you know you're writing an email, you also know it'll be sent when you're online again. You understand how that works. And we're bringing that kind of mentality to any app. Any app that you build on Hoodie gets this offline first built in. And you asked earlier if you have to set anything up specially to make your app offline first. We just give you a very neat, very minimal abstraction, like an API to do storage. And that already works offline first. You never see any of the... any of the plumbing of this, it just works for you.
Okay, and since PouchDB is essentially CouchDB written in JavaScript, can I run that on my Node.js server?
Yeah, that you can do that too if you want to. That kind of like in some systems can be a little bit icky to install Couch, so sometimes it's easier to just do it in Pouch, and the latest development version of Hoodie actually supports that as well. There's a project called PouchDB server that behaves like a CouchDB, but kind of in a SQLite kind of sense, when you like compare SQLite to, say, MySQL or Postgres, where the one is obviously the multi-user server, and the other one is that you can use locally as a single user.
Very cool. You mentioned Firebase earlier. I'm a little bit familiar with that because I was also looking at it synchronizing with Angular, so that we actually had, they call it three-way synchronization. So I can change something on my screen, immediately propagates up to the server, which then immediately propagates over to his screen or her screen. Is this something that's similar to what I can do with Hoodie?
Yeah, Hody has real-time updates or soft real-time. Like, it's not actually real-time. Nothing on the web is. But the thing that you just explained where I change something and something else happens on a different screen, maybe on the different part of the world, definitely supported as well. The storage APIs are all asynchronous and event-based, so you can receive events for when new stuff happens. So if someone else updates some data, you can get an update shown into your UI. You mentioned Angular as a particular front end that is easy to hook up with Firebase. Of course, Firebase is kind of front end agnostic, whereas Meteor, for example, kind of has the front and back end work together in unison. You have to use the whole ecosystem. And with Hody, we made the conscious choice that we'd rather support everything that you can use in the front end. So Hody is also front end agnostic. So whether you want to use Angular, React, Ember, your own stuff, Vanilla, Backbone, all of this is supported with Hody. We're kind of like a thin layer on top of everything that the back end does, and that's where our responsibility ends.
Cool. Hey, Jen, I wanted to go back to you for a second. As a fellow writer, of course, one of the most critical things is figuring out who the target audience is, so you know what you can leave out of the conversation and what you have to absolutely put in the first few paragraphs. And for me, as a consumer of that editorial material, understanding what parts I definitely need to read or what I can skip past because I already kind of am familiar with that. What are the challenges you're seeing with Hody in putting together materials for this?
Gosh, that's a really good question. And honestly, like Jan mentioned before, I wasn't around when they started doing the major website rehaul. So I can't take credit for organizing any of that content. But I would say, as a writer coming into this community, that the thing that has helped me most with organization of thought is having good relationships with the developers on the project and just not having any ego involved at all and be able to ask a lot of questions because, I mean, these folks are passionate about what they're doing. And I feel like my role and the other writers and editors is to help support getting the word out about that project and helping share that passion. So that's kind of my take on it.
Okay. And are you planning on, I know some people learn better from a video. Are you planning on doing screen captures and other videos for to help people along?
Oh, we have a lot of plans.
people along. But we also need your help. So if anyone is good at this, you're very welcome to join Hody and help out with either the programming side or the editorial side. We're a very friendly bunch, and we appreciate any, even the smallest contribution.
Well, I consider myself pretty lucky because I started out life merely wanting to be a programmer. And my first full-time job was a summer temp position in a writing group because it's the only thing that was available. And I so enjoyed the writing because it's still the same thing. It's an expression of an art. It's just into what medium. Is it coming out as a computer code or is it coming out as some nice stuff that people can read? And I also know when I went to video production, it was really great because I could produce a music video for a band and people could understand that. But when I tell them what I do at work, it's like, I don't know what that is. So it's fun being an artist. It's fun being a multi-disciplined artist as well. Getting back more to the programming side again, what was my next question? I'm so busy talking about myself. I forgot entirely what I was going to say next. Aaron, you have a question?
Yeah, sure. So maybe. I don't know. I was just reading the website. I was trying to get started with Hody. You caught me playing with the the project.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
I do have a question. So you said before that this was not quite 1.0 yet. So I guess this is a two-part question. The first one is when do you think it'll be 1.0 or is this ready for people to really use and develop applications on or not? A lot of open source projects before they get to 1.0 are perfectly fine to use, of course, for production type work, at least in most people's estimation. But that's part one. And then part two is what are people doing with it now? Like, what have you seen people develop using Hody? Is there anything we would recognize or anything really cool that you want to highlight that people have already made with this? I don't know who that's for. Maybe Jan.
Excellent. I'll jump in quickly. For the versions, there's a current stable version of Fudi that's not the 1.0, but that we are comfortable running in production. The aforementioned note-taking app Minutes.io has been running in production for like 2.5 years now on that infrastructure. So it definitely works. It's definitely fine. Other people are using it. Like I mentioned, the hosting service AppBack is also supporting that. So definitely worth using. But we had, after we kind of shipped that, we had one more big transition to do internally from a code perspective, which is getting in PouchDB in the front end, which we didn't start out with, because when we started, PouchDB wasn't quite ready yet, and we built our own kind of mini pouch that is kind of not very good. So we want to switch to the real deal now, and we did that. But we didn't want to call Hudi 1.0 because that switch would break applications between using the old and the new one. So and we didn't want to kind of give people that burden. And while rewriting all of that, we kind of rewrote the backend twice, because why not? It's getting a lot better, a lot easier to contribute to now. So and then we came close to shipping a 1.0 a bunch of times, and we kind of stayed away from it in a way. And now we have a bit of a different strategy, and we call them we have a bunch of like release names for them. The first one that we are about to ship is called the camp release, like a summer camp with tents and everything. Next one is going to be the city, the village release, and then we're working towards the city. And the idea is that you can't, like, Hudi works like in a camp, like you can go out and camp and have fun, but it's kind of rudimentary, right? You have a tent and it's shelter, but it's shelter, it's not home. It has walls and keeps you away from the rain, but it isn't really comfy to live in for longer periods of time. So the camp release of Hudi is everything works and you can build apps with it, but there are certain frills lacking. Maybe it's not documented very well. Maybe there's a few features missing. And this is about to ship within the next few weeks. The focus for that release is contributors. We're making it very easy for other people to jump in and help out with Hudi, either editorial or with code, teaming up with Your First PR, an initiative that helps get people into open source contributing, we even wrote a blog post of how other open source projects can provide issue descriptions for first timers to come in that explain the GitHub workflow and everything else. So that's what we're focusing on, getting a lot more people building Hudi instead of using Hudi for now. And with these people, after that release, we're working towards the city release, where we have a bunch of houses, it's comfortable to live in, and you can build real apps. And I think that's when you would traditionally call it a 1.0, where it mostly works, and everybody can do this. And then we want to evolve this village to a city or a metropole, where people can make it their own. I mentioned plugins before. There's going to be a rich plugin ecosystem that people can contribute to by publishing stuff to NPM. That's kind of how we're thinking. And it's less 1.0 means this is the stable production version, and more this is what to expect from this release. So before it's a city release, we're probably not going to target the not really programmers too much, because we're currently needing to focus to make the project more accessible for more people to contribute to. I hope that makes a little sense.
It makes a lot of sense. And Aaron, let me interrupt here for a second, because I have an important message also to bring to our audience, which is whether you're developing an app, a website, or working on a server-based project, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean offers Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed easily to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. This helps you get your project off the ground quickly and makes it easy to scale when you find success. DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including me. I've been a DigitalOcean subscriber for over a year now. Deploy and configure your Droplets via a streamlined control panel or simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. Select from one of the many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, or Node.js to get up and running quickly, or build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSDs, and boy, those things are fast, in the state-of-the-art data centers around the world. Highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. You can also use advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via API. It's an extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your Droplet. Want to configure a LAMP server? Set up a virtual desktop or VPN, they've got you covered. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of Floss Weekly. I have one follow-up question to what I just heard a moment ago. So you're building this sort of ecosystem about plugins, and you have an interface for that, a standard API for that. Is this going to be like an eternally maintained API? Or are you planning on messing with people by changing it a year from now?
The plugin ecosystem is something that we believe very strongly in, will like help a lot of people make Hoodie their own and make useful for Hoodie. So we're committed to keeping this around for a long time and keep very stable and be very conservative with upgrading. We're kind of looking at Ember.js, which has a very interesting strategy for keeping people happy with upgrades while providing new features at a rapid pace. That said, I mentioned the currently stable version of Hoodie and the camp release. And in between those, to be able to get to the camp release, we had to throw away all the plugin code. So in that sense, we are screwing current users over one time. But when we get to the camp and then the village release, we will have a well thought out, very straightforward application or a plugin interface that we want to support for a very long time.
Cool. And you wanted to talk about DigitalOcean?
Oh, yeah, we love DigitalOcean, and we kind of try to get to a one-click deploy for Hoodie going there as well. So talking about the how to get it running and started, I hope the answer will be sign up for DigitalOcean, use your Floss credits, and use the one-click deploy, and you have your Hoodie running right away, or in 55 seconds. if anyone wants to help with that, nudge wink, please get in touch.
It sounds like there's a lot of overlapping and interlocking sub-projects about this. Can you describe the relationship between, say, your company that's doing CouchDB and how Hoodie plays into that? And I'm a little lost on how this all comes together.
That's all right. I want to jump in on that in the beginning as well. Because Jen mentioned working for a company, Hoodie is a bona fide open source project that is owned by the people who contribute to it. It just happens that the people who started Hoodie also built a company called Neighbor Hoodie, because we're kind of in the same area, to build a tech company that we would actually like working for, and also to have like a commercial entity that can donate proceeds to Hoodie development. We do custom JavaScript development. We have a project called greenkeeper.io that helps with NPM dependency updates. We run minutes.io as a commercial project. And all our proceeds go towards paying us and paying others to work on Hoodie and getting all that together. So that's kind of the thing between the open source project and the company. On top of that, we started a movement called Offline First, because we thought, hey, if people have offline first app or want to build offline first apps, they're going to be running into a bunch of user experience problems. People are already joking about the floppy disk as the icon for saving, but that doesn't make any sense anymore. If I store it locally, that's not the information I need. Of course it's stored on the phone, but is it synced yet? What's the sync status? What does that have to look like? What is the outbox and inbox metaphor that you can use for email, but for a collaborative drawing or media application? And we kind of tried to figure out, try to go into the library of user interface best practices and get the offline first design volume out and learn about that. And that turns out that just doesn't exist. So offline first is kind of a hope to get the community around to developing these best practices around user experiences and down from there into what technologies can be used in what circumstances. And we're very, very lucky that many others have jumped on the bandwagon. So it's no longer just us and our particular version of synchronization. Both Google and Firefox are contributing heavily with their work on service workers and related technologies. And all of this goes under the Offline First banner. So this is a really nice like cross-industry movement that also needs a lot of people. So please help contribute if you want to look into that.
Well, I was just going to ask about that because, and you explained a little bit right there, but I mean, you know, for me personally, I mean, I'm not a professional programmer. I don't get paid to program, but I do it every day. And my question is like, let me set this up. So I consider myself an offline programmer already, right? Because I write mostly in Python and I'm running stuff on Raspberry Pis and things like that. And so I write my code. I ship it over the Raspberry Pi, I log into the Raspberry Pi, and I run it, right? So I'm kind of already doing offline today. So, but this seems to be a huge differentiator for Hoodie in terms of doing this offline. So I'm curious, two questions, like, you know, what's different about this than what I do in the description I just gave? And B, like, how does this work with teams? So, like, what if I have a team of developers and they're all writing offline code? And then all of a sudden, you know, three or four of them hit the coffee shop and get online and stuff gets uploaded. I mean, how does that, is it like a version manager system like Git that handles all that, the synchronization of all the changes and things?
All right. So let me try the first one first. What's the difference between what you're doing and what we're doing? The idea for Hoodie is that there is a, and there's scenarios where there's no real difference. There's a back end and a front end, and they communicate. But the distinction is that they can be separate for any amount of time. And whether the back end is in the cloud, your office with an uplink or a home or wherever, doesn't really matter. The front end always works and occasionally synchronizes back. So the biggest contrast, and like we said, our main use case is kind of the individual software as a service type app. That you have a cloud instance or server somewhere, and the front end lives on people's devices. So there's a physical separation between those two, whereas if you run something on the Raspberry locally, both front and back end are kind of locally in your LAN. Although Hoodie, of course, supports that setup as well. And then what was the other question?
The other question was, that explains the offline, but what if I have a team of developers? How are the changes managed? Is there version tracking, or how does that stuff get all synchronized?
I highly recommend, again, listening to last week's podcast, but I'll sum it up or that part for you real quick. The unique thing about CouchDB as a database it behaves more like Git than any other database. It's more like it's more Git than Mongo. In comparison, and that means it understands conflicts, it can deal with them, it gives you tools to resolve them, so that you can build all that up in the way you need it, so that collaboration can work, that you can flag issues if there's data overriding or if there's conflicts and all that kind of stuff. And all of that, like Hoodie inherits all of that because Couch and Pouch have all that built in.
Okay, we have just a little bit more time right now, so I want to make sure that we've covered most everything. One of the big burning questions for me still is, okay, what kind of people do you need to make this go further and faster?
If you're like Jen and now are capable of speaking and writing the English language and want to help out with updating the website, updating the community on things that go on every week, right? Like interviews with developers, that kind of stuff. You're a perfect candidate to start out with Hoodie and contribute right away. If you know JavaScript and know your way around the front end, we have a list of starter issues for you that you can jump in right away. Go to hood.ie/contribute to get started. That kind of gets you set up. And we have a Slack and with an IRC bridge where you can join on Freenode when we can talk you through everything and do some all the handholding that you need to contribute. And we're kind of running a philosophy of for smaller issues and for like experienced maintainers of a software, it usually is less work to just fix the issue than to open and describe what the problem is. And we're trying, have done for the past 9 months or so, have been tried to almost exclusively swap to write beginner-friendly issues, regardless how trivial the issue is. And we're getting like 3-4 new contributors every week through this. You can check progress on Twitter and GitHub on that. So we're very beginner-friendly. Even if you're an experienced programmer but you have not done anything in open source yet, we can guide you there as well. So, and if you're any good at like backend Node.js programming, decentralized databases, if you love thinking about resolving distributed conflicts, merge strategies, all a little bit more harder computer sciencey stuff, you're more than welcome to join the team and like help build out that like fundamental architecture that empowers so many more people to do useful things with web technology.
Cool. Also, you talked earlier about developing plugins and sharing them. I'm also, of course, intimately familiar with the Perl CPAN. Is there something like that for sharing my plugins with others?
Yeah, we're kind of, I don't want to like keep sending digs at Meteor because we're kind of going against everything they're doing, where they said, okay, we need our own, like we need to build our own C-SPAN for Meteor related things. We thought, well, we're a JavaScript project and there's already NPM, so you can just use that. And that's that. There's a format to Hoodie plugins, and they have a name, Hoodie-plugin-your-name, and there's a few conventions that are well documented, and then you publish it on NPM like you would any other module, and that's it.
And one other thing, I because I'm playing with Angular now, I've been actually forced to use an IDE instead of my IDE, which is Emacs. I know that I'm using WebStorm because it was the one that was most recommended, and it's free for open source projects, although I paid for the commercial version. There's some information that the Angular team provides to WebStorm to be able to have it highlight and autocomplete in interesting ways. Is there something similar for that for the extra things that are in Hoodie?
Definitely does not exist at this point. If you've seen Ember, they have like a Chrome and Firefox extension that has like adds onto the debugger and everything. This is like another example of deeper developer tools integration. This is definitely something that we want to have at some point. If you're into that, we'll welcome you with open arms, because this is stuff that we want to, if that's an angle of contribution that you're interested in. So, that's just the positive way of saying we definitely do not have this.
Well, that's a long way to say that. That's great. It's like saying, I ask you if there's any wheels on the car, and you start saying, well, you know, when it's not moving, it doesn't need wheels. Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, just a short, yeah, we don't have wheels on the car yet. All right. We're used to vehicles that don't have wheels. We're almost out of time, like I said, and I want to make sure that we've covered everything. Jan, with you first, what have we left out?
It's a
difficult question. I always know. People.
Yeah, I know. I know. There's so many things. Like, I don't know. I'll just drop in a few words. We mentioned the code of conduct last week, like adding more inclusivity in open source with the CouchDB project, which then inspired the Apache Software Foundation to do it for all their 250 plus projects. Hoodie is actually where CouchDB got that inspiration from. And we got that inspiration from other projects as well, but we were one of the very first open source projects to do this openly, and we're openly inclusive. Our editorial team, for example, has a guidelines, and Jen, you can talk about this a little bit more maybe in your turn. How do you phrase certain things to sound more, like to have more inclusive language that we use on the website, on the blog, and everything. We're running a Slack bot that reminds people to use gender inclusive languages and non-ableist language and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of little things that we are doing to try to improve inclusivity, and we see it working. There's a lot more we need to do, though. And again, if people want to help out with these kind of things, we're very, very welcoming to these kind of people, to you contributing. And on the flip side, kind of big picture, I see Hoodie to be like a real heavyweight competitor to the big five companies, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, and Google. That five. Anyway, all of them have a backend as a service type service. They all have certain degrees of offlineness built in or not, but all of them are controlled by a big US corporation. And Hoodie is kind of sort of the only open source thing that kind of sort of goes in that direction, that tries to address this, like to be an accessible open source project that everyone can use, that you can use on your own terms, license under Apache 2, you can do like whatever you want with it. And I would love, if people are interested in like this bigger vision of being like the Apache HDB server or the Nginx for the backend as a service, like you like want to build big web infrastructure, please join us. Like we have a big vision, and we need every hand and every head and every brain that can help us get there.
Okay, Jen, same question. Or continue on.
I don't feel like we left much out. I just want to encourage people to contribute to the project, especially if you haven't worked in open source before. I feel like Hoodie is one of the best open source projects for first timers, just because of the friendliness and the community that we've built, being diverse and inclusive of people with all kinds of talents, not just developers. But I'm getting a message from Gregor, who we mentioned earlier in the show, to talk more about the editorial team, you know, being its own thing. And like Jan mentioned, we have like a style guide and a mechanics guide for people to reference if they are struggling with, you know, appropriate uses of language and, you know, basic terminology. And we follow the same code of conduct as the rest of the project. So, you know, there are those kinds of guidelines there for the editorial team too. But yeah, I would say if you know someone who is interested in joining the, Jan and I joked about this yesterday, who's interested in joining the open source party, it's not just for developers. You know, a successful project needs all kinds of different minds and hands to help make all of the moving parts go. And so that's where we are trying to be very vocal about getting all kinds of different talented folks to help us along this journey to beat out the big five, apparently.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just not writers and editors. You know, there are things down the road with the different releases that we want to be tackling. And I mean, there's areas that people could jump in right now on sponsorship and, you know, community team stuff, event organization. There are, you know, documentation writers, especially. There are a lot of different areas that people could get started working in open source with Hoodie today, right after this podcast.
Cool. Awesome. I actually gave a talk down at Fizzlay down in Porto Alegre, Brazil, one time. It was on how you can contribute to open source even if you're not a developer. And I listed a lot of the same things that you just listed. So I'm very familiar with this concept of, you know, even sending in a bug report helps. You know, because it gives a direction. It gives maybe it'll fix something, but mostly it lets developers know, oh, I should be working on this if it's an enhancement request. So yeah, definitely familiar with that. Again, we're wrapping up here. I was hoping to wrap up like 2 minutes ago, but that's okay. Jen, I always ask two questions at the end of the show. What's your favorite text editor?
My favorite text editor is Sublime.
Okay, cool. And
I don't know.
Yeah, you say you're not much of a developer, but if you had to script something, what would you use? What's your favorite scripting language?
My JavaScript?
Yeah, that'll work.
Vanilla? I don't know. I've only written the one line. And it was part of a camp like 2 years ago. And I was like, oh, cool, I can do this now.
Yeah, for Perl, it was similar. I only contributed one thing that ever went in the core distribution, and then it got removed later. So there's nothing of me in the core distribution at all, so I can definitely relate. Jan, you answered those two questions last week, but for this week's listeners, can you reiterate?
Favorite editor is definitely Emacs, although I'm on the Mac and use TextMate most of the time, but anywhere else, I'm on Emacs. The pinky finger is kind of tuned that way. It's going to be for the rest of my life. And then I really enjoy scripting in Shell, not necessarily Bash, but SH.
Okay, cool, cool. Well, like I said, we're running out of time, so I really appreciate the two of you coming on and talking about Hoodie. This thing definitely looks like it's got legs. We can definitely go somewhere with this, and life's going to be good. So thank you both, Jan and Jen. Did I get it right? Yeah, I got it right, for being on today's show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, great, great. That was Jan and Yen. No. They let anybody do this show. Jan and Jen talking to us about Hoodie. What do you think, Aaron?
I thought it was Jan and Jen. Sorry. I'll jump in on it. Our poor Americans. We can't pronounce anything correctly. Anyway, back to the question. I thought it was great. I think this is awesome. And I especially like their focus on getting people involved and saying, hey, just jump in, contribute, because it is really important. And like you said, I think the standard question, or the standard answer for the question, you know, I like this, but I can't code, what can I do, is, oh, go work on documentation. We need translators, or we need people to work on documentation or something. And there is a lot more than you can do for open source projects. And especially if you're going to have a successful project, you need people doing all those sorts of things. So I think that's really, really cool. And I just like the concept. I think this is something, if I had time, I'm at the point right now where I have to say no to certain things. I just can't. I can't take on anymore. But I was playing with it as we were doing the show for a little bit, and I think this is really great. I think people should definitely check this out if they're interested in developing these types of applications. Because to the point I just made, you can't worry about everything. You can't always worry about the back end, and it takes time to go find somebody else that can come in. Oh, we need an IT guy now to come in and set up all our servers and manage. Oh, now we need a DBA to come in and handle the database. And so, I mean, it does actually take things off your plate as a pure applications developer, you don't always want to worry about. So from that aspect, I think it's brilliant.
Cool, cool. Yeah, I say this about every other show. I want to go download this right away now and start playing with it. But, you know, I'm sitting at my client's location. They need me upstairs right now. So just after I wrap this show, I'm going back to work, and I don't have time to play with any of this stuff anymore. But this does look like it's got some legs. So I may get involved, actually. I may maybe help out with the documentation and stuff, or maybe review documentation, because I'm a pretty good copy editor, things like that. So anyway, I can't go on any further with that. Let's go ahead and look at our upcoming guest list. We have David Wilson and Heather Wilson coming on to talk about Linux Camp 2016, which is a place to get Linux certified. Not just Insane certified, but Linux certified. That's pretty cool. And then following that will be Brett Gaylor. He works with Mozilla, pretty senior guy Mozilla, about their security initiatives in this day and age of people wiretapping and all the bad viruses, not viruses, but like the attacks on SSL and things like that. This is definitely something we want to learn a lot more about. We're also going to bring on a couple of the senior people from OSCON, and they're going to talk about what's coming up at this year's OSCON. If you haven't yet signed up for OSCON, it's pretty expensive, but we'll make that slightly easier. If you use the code FLOSS as a discount, FLOSS, you get a 20% discount off of your OSCON registration. We thank them for that. You see these. We added, just between last week and this week, we added a new person to our list, and that's Bui. And that's from their webpage. It's a private community-based crisis response system. So it's a way of letting your friends and neighbors know you're in distress. And on your mobile phone, it can send your current Latin lawn and something like that. So, you know, if you're being followed by somebody going down the street, you can let your friends know that something's going on crazy. So I like this. All private, all open source. Going to be a lot of fun talking to them. At twitch.tv/floss, you'll find the homepage for this show. And from there, you'll see linked the big spreadsheet, which has all this and more on how I'm trying to parcel this. I'm still filling Q2. I keep saying I'm going to send out more mail, but I didn't have time last weekend. I hopefully have time tomorrow or possibly tonight to send out a lot more mail and hopefully fill up the rest of the question marks in the first column there. We have a live stream usually at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays at live.twitch.tv. Except coming up in the next 5 or 6 weeks or so, we have a little bit of a juggle. We're going to have at least one Wednesday for sure, and possibly a couple of weeks where there's two different shows being taped in the same week. And that's because I'm going away on another cruise, 14-day, 15-day cruise. And we figured that we'll actually tape ahead so we can maintain our wonderful schedule so our sponsors are happy. So just pay attention when I say the next week's show is here, or we're going to have a show this Thursday and stuff, because it's just going to be a little bit chaotic for that for a little bit. Okay, and follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus. You can follow that automatically tweets over to at Floss Weekly. You can also follow me at Merlin, the tweets there, or Google Plus. That's my primary place. There's Randall L. Schwartz. Again, I'm going to be at OSCON. I'm probably going to be at YAPSE North America a little bit later. That's down in Orlando. So, yes, Orlando in the summer. Go figure. That's a smart time to be there. Anything you want to plug there, Aaron?
Sure. There's lots of things to plug. There's a couple of things I really want to say, but the proverbial chickens have not hatched. So I guess stay tuned. Watch this space. There may be some exciting news coming up, but I do have some other stuff to plug in the meantime, which is Benicia Mini Maker Faire is coming up on April 16th. So if you're in the Bay Area and you want to attend a small, intimate Maker Faire as opposed to the big one in San Mateo, come check out our Maker Faire. It's really, really cool. We have some exciting things going on, lots of art, crafts, makery things, people making scale, miniature scale engines of, like, you know, some historical, you know, I've got this Corvette engine and I made it, you know, 1/6 scale, and they bring it and it actually works. It's really cool. So check that out. You can follow me online on Google Plus. That's where I hang out. I'm on Facebook and Twitter too, but mostly on Google Plus because it's really cool. And and I'll be at IOUG for all you Oracle DBAs and application folks out there. I'll be at IOUG in Las Vegas. I think it's coming up on the 10th of April. So if by the off chance there's anybody out there that's actually going to IOUG and is also a fan of the show or wants to say hi, just let me know. Connect with me. I'll be glad to get a beer, a cup of coffee or something with you, or just hang out, say hi, whatever. So, yeah.
Well, thanks again, Aaron, for co-hosting the show and giving me a chance to take a break. That's the main part I like. But no, you asked some really great questions. Yeah,
Hey, you know, by the way, I forgot to mention this. I set it up when I was on. I love pointing at the camera. Twig last week. If there are listeners of the show that happen to be in this area and they want to come to the Maker Faire we're doing, you can actually save 20% off your ticket prices by using the promo code TWIT. I actually set that up since I'm the head of the planning committee. I was able to go in and set that up. So if you are in the local area and you want to get a little extra off your tickets, you can use TWIT as the promo code when you buy your tickets and you'll get 20% off. So just FYI on that one too.
Cool. Well, thank you, Aaron, again, and we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.